You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in Magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
That would just be kind of the heightened stereotype of Americans.
Too efficient to get, far too efficient and flexible to spend.
He's one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world.
It's the fact that we've got a little bit of Northeast bias.
They are painfully honest and heartfelt.
Putting five Evander Holyfields into the ring and seeing who wins.
My presumed teammates.
I believe it's on my birthday weekend, guys, so, you know, if you want to give me a gift or something.
Oh, you brave soul, welcome to episode 73 of TryHards. The countdown is on before we head to the old home of Three River Stadium. Don't look for it, you can't find it anymore. But they erected something more beautiful on its gravesite. We hope to erect some beautiful legacy wins at Eternal Weekend this weekend. The TryHards, as always this week, Brian Tibbetts, Matthew Hurley, and I'm Sean Seacrease. Thank you for joining us. Guys, as we get ready to embark on our trip to the Steel City, Brian, what are you drinking?
In honor of going to a place not known for beer, I'm on the High Life. Because it is the champagne of beers, everybody. I am actually actively saving up my beer funds to spend as much money as I possibly can in the fair Steel City. So, yeah, I'm just kind of pulling out whatever I could find in the back of the fridge. And lo and behold, when High Life as a 12-pack is on sale for like $8, that's not a bad buy. In the summer, when you have people over, it's great. So, yeah, just kind of finishing up the rest of those.
That being the champagne of beers, you can always recork it if you don't finish that bottle. Matt, more scotch for you this week?
It is, in fact, a scotch week. I've got a different scotch that this one has been matured inside of maple cask. It's got an interesting taste to it. It's kind of like a little bit of a sweeter but harsh scotch, if that makes sense. I am also bringing up some of the – a few weeks ago, I drank one of the best beers on cast I've ever had, and I am bringing that up to Eternal Weekend, so you guys will be able to enjoy it.
This is going to happen then? This is like – you're not just teasing me with this because I'm –
No, it's Lauren actually, when she went to work this morning, she's got two behind the counter, and they got a case in at the dock, so she's actually going to pick me up two more.
Those just fell off the truck, didn't they?
Yep. Yeah. No, she's like, well, we have a case somewhere. And apparently, like, they had just got it in like 10 minutes before she got to work this morning at like 6 o'clock. So,
well, that sounds like the best thing that might happen to us this weekend in Pittsburgh. For the first time, it's not unusually hot on a Monday. It keeps spiking every Monday, and I keep just sweating profusely recording these. But it's actually nice and cool here in the Midwest as we record this. So I have, later than I'd like to, transitioned to one of my fall treats, and that is the Fulton's Harvest Pumpkin Pie Liqueur. If you've ever had, like, Bailey's Irish Cream, think that style, but it's got a little bit of like a cinnamon pumpkin flavor to it. Just a rocks glass full of ice, pour this over it, and away you go. I go through a bottle or two each fall about this time of year. It's always just a great treat, and it gets my tongue prepared for all the stouts and porters that are coming up after this. So the Fulton's Harvest this week here in Command Central. Guys, what Magic did you play this week? We got together with some of our patrons for our top-level Patreon hangout. If you haven't checked that out, check out some of our Patreon levels available on the page at patreon.com/tryhards. If you're already a member, thank you so much. It was great to hang out with you guys yesterday. I know Jose made it for the first time ever. It was great to hang with him. He's actually in Matt's neck of the woods, so that was fun to see and hear from him. And we hope to see some of you at EW coming up this weekend. More details on that and how we can get together coming up on the Patreon page. And we're going to be sending an email out as well once those details are on the books. But guys, other than that hangout, Matt, what Magic did you play this week?
We got together on Saturday for a standard showdown. I built a buddy of mine a deck that normally doesn't play standard, but he's a good player. And he's like, you know, I can pick something up. I knew they didn't have the cards at the shop we were playing at. So I ran across town to the other shop, picked up the extra cards in it, which were basically lands. And I'm like, they're standard lands. You know, they're not going to go ridiculous. Built the deck. We met up for lunch. And then we went there to play standard showdown. And we get there and we're the only two players. So we played one match of standard, goofing off, and then we decided that they had a board game demo there, and we decided that, hey, we're going to do these board games. So we ended up doing it's Arkham Horror series of board games. We did the board games from like 2 p.m. to like 10. So we literally played board games all day instead of playing Magic. So other than that, I played in a couple of standard leagues online with Esper Tokens and Esper Marionette Master that Conley Woods has put together. And they're both pretty sweet. And I got to say that they might drag me out of the house for, you know, a little bit of standard time because they're pretty nice.
Reanimating and killing through Marionette Master damage. That's the exact kind of thing I know you love to do. Brian, what Magic did you play this week?
Watching us with our patrons play Magic, and then Sean and I were able to hop on and do some Skype with both of our Legacy decks, and we kind of threw a couple of wrinkles at each other. Me throwing kind of it's kind of a junk Stoneblade deck at Sean, which he was able to handle no problem. And then Sean was able to give me some reps in with like a Stoneblade deck, which was really fun for me to get some reps in with Show and Tell. Or Sneak and Show. I was happy to get some reps in, but I'm looking to get as many reps in as I can prior to Saturday's launch of the Legacy Championship. So be prepared to sling some cardboard this week.
Yeah, that's what the travel day on Thursday night / Friday morning is for. I think that we just get some reps in as that goes along and try to get ready. Other than the practice with Brian and playing with our patrons on our Sunday Google Hangout, I got to play a little standard at the shop this week. Once a month, my LGS has launched what they're calling a premium event. So something other than just the $5 F&M event on Friday night. So I wanted to help them get it launched off the right way. And I put together a standard deck that is, if you're old school enough, you'll recognize the phrase Dagah control. If you're new school, it's Mardu control. Essentially, control without blue in it. And why would you do that? Well, it gives you access to so many more board control spells than blue will give you. Blue gives you counter spells, and it gives you dig in order to draw more cards. But what it doesn't do well and has to branch out for is creature kill. And so by playing black, red, and white, you get all of that in spades. You get some hand control, and you get some very sticky threats like Gideon of the Trials, Chandra, Scorpion God, Gonti, where you get value out of it even if they kill it. So it just tore up black-white mid-range, tore up a mill deck. I had some bad land draws against blue-black control. I think that's going to be a little bit closer than I hoped it would be because the testing I did against control was against Approach. And it does very well because Approach doesn't have any threats outside of Approach in game one. So you can tailor your game plan very specifically. And then I just had my mana base was fighting me all day. A loss to Rug that I shouldn't have had with 18 black sources in the deck. I duressed them, took their relevant interaction to play my Chandra Torch of Defiance, knowing that they were going to play double Long Tusk Cub the next turn. I had double Fatal Push in my hand, looked down, and on turn 6 in an 18 black source list, only had access to one black. So that game went south at that moment when I had to use it a different way rather than having a clear board and an uncontested Planeswalker ticking up. So the fact that my mana base was fighting me, I want to get in some more reps with it. But it's fun. If you like non-blue control, it's something that you can take a look at. Imminent Doom. Yes, I played it in the main deck. It was a lot of fun. Essentially, if you get it down, Ram Red can't beat you because every spell you have is a double removal spell, and they just don't draw enough cards to keep up with you at that point. So it's just a different way to think about control. What I really wanted to bring up about the weekend was one of two rants that I'm going to have to get the show started this week. The first one is just a mini rant. And Brian, Matt, I want to get your thoughts on this after I kind of set it up. The population at this tournament, and they were just starting the series, so we had like 12 or 14. It was a four-round tournament with a cut just to top four, not top eight. In that situation, I feel like round one is actually an elimination round. Because if you start with a loss, you have to get extraordinarily lucky to come back through tiebreakers at 3-1 since you took your loss in round one and make that top four. Brian, have you had experience with smaller tournaments that cut to top four? And have you had a similar sort of visceral response where round one is actually single elimination? And if you win, then you've got room to kind of finish at 3-1.
The last couple of PPTQs that I've played at the shop here in Galesburg have done that. It is really tough when you lose that first round because you do feel like you're just kind of in the tank. You're playing from behind. You're kind of playing for your life. And so that is a really tough place to be. I don't know what the answer to that, though, is. If they've got the people and per tournament rules, if you're going to make a cut to a top, either 4 or 8, is there any way around that?
I don't think there's any way around it, but I think it just puts so much stress on that first round that it feels like it's part of almost the single elimination top 4 or top 8 at that point. And it's yeah. Unfortunate because there is a method to the madness of first round pairings, but it's not a sort of seeded situation in my mind if that's going to be the case. Matt, have you had any experience with that?
Yes, and I'm not a huge fan of it. I mean, it's just like you said, Sean, it's just like a super round where you essentially have to win it. Otherwise, you're screwed. When I was back in Quincy, he used to like to do the cut to top fours a lot. And you would always hear me in the background going, ugh, like, you know, that's not a good thing. So there's no way to fix it. It's just kind of, it is what it is. So there's really nothing you can do.
So that was kind of part one of my frustration this weekend. The other thing, and this is more play related than it is format related, format as far as tournaments go, is, and I know I've brought this up on the show before, but for once and for all, I would like to get Wizards to admit that they made a mistake with energy. I had to play against Rug Energy this weekend, and I have many times before. I just want to double down on the fact. Energy is too efficient to get, far too efficient and flexible to spend, and it is completely uninteractable. Remember when we had the New World Order and they wanted you to play to the board for interaction? It was all about interaction. Well, they not only created a new mechanic that was outside the realm of the game prior to this, but they also unbelievably printed no way to interact with it. In my mind, if they were going to make energy so flexible and efficient, each color should have had their version of an interactive hate card that interacted with opponent's energy. Guys, there is a long time until Kaladesh rotates out of standard. Are we just saddled with this mistake by Wizards until then, Matt?
Unfortunately, yes. I had heard rumors, and this was just rumors, of course, but I had heard rumors that they were testing a artifact that was essentially kind of like a mana drain style artifact. I was like, okay, yeah, that'd be cool. But then that they pulled back on it because they said that essentially it totally negated the value that energy had and that they wanted, you know, like Aetherworks, Marvel and stuff to shine. Well, this was all before their playtest team, and I would hope that their playtest team would actually catch this beforehand. And so because of that, I you know, you're right, Sean. Energy just kind of fell through the cracks, I think, and they made it just too powerful of a mechanic.
Brian, well, am I just a frustrated guy who is getting beat by energy constantly?
Yeah, I think you are. But I'm not saying you don't have a point. Energy is, you're absolutely right. It's way too efficient to get. The issue is when you spend energy, it is a real cost to spend it, but the fact is that you can kind of rebuild those resources very, very quickly. I always found it very fascinating that Wizards has some things that are kind of off limits, the emblems from Planeswalkers. You cannot interact with an emblem whatsoever. There's no way, it's not a permanent, you cannot, you know, vindicate it, you cannot exile it, anything like that. And the same is true for energy. I mean, if you're keeping your energy stores, there's no way to interact with that particular card on the battlefield that just keeps ticking up or ticking down, and something's going to go wrong for you if they're ticking down with energy. I find that very strange in a game as interactive as Magic is supposed to be, that there are these kind of elements that are on the fringes that we're never going to be able to interact with. And so will we ever see a time when we can interact with an emblem from a Planeswalker? I don't think so. I think that's something that's going to be off limits, and I think this is something else as well. However, I do think that Wizards has a bigger issue on their hands with something like Phyrexian Mana in Modern and in Legacy, as opposed to that in Standard, because we know there's a rotation. And even though it's going to last well over another year, Sean, like you said, it is something that does have kind of a sunset date. And I think we can kind of live with it until then, if not just, hey, hop on board and build the best energy deck you can.
You know, one of the famous things that Maru does is the storm scale every once in a while on how likely is a mechanic to be reprinted. That should obviously be changed to the dredge scale, because by now we all know that R&D has admitted dredge is the most broken thing that has ever come out. I put energy second on the list now to dredge. In my mind, it's dredge, then energy, and then storm. And the reason that I say that is because, yes, storm is very powerful, but you can interact with it via counter spells and other measures, hand disruption. And once you have energy, there is no way whatsoever to assail that resource. Even in standard, it might cost you 6 mana now, but you can still destroy a land. They don't print Stone Rain anymore, but you can destroy a land if you're willing to pay the price for it. Energy is a completely unassailable resource that can be spent at instant speed. It's not tied to the card that you played. It can be spent on any outlet that requires energy. It is just so powerful. And I think that if they had to do it over again, there would be some checks in place for that energy the way that it's printed right now. So that's been my experience. Have I played energy? Yes. Have I played against energy? Yes. I won with it, lost with it, won against it, and lost against it. But it is becoming so fine-tuned now, and it's casting such a long shadow. Something always does have to be the best and the most powerful. This is it. Get used to it. Maybe they'll blow the doors off with Return to Dominaria coming up and overshadow energy. I doubt it, but it could happen. Until then, it's not a dinosaur and pirate world. It's still an energy world, at least in standard. We saw that most often at U.S. Nationals. Energy was in the finals, piloted by Jerry Thompson. He couldn't quite get around blue-black control in that finals, piloted by Oliver Tomenko. This was U.S. Nationals, but it might as well have been called the tournament where Reed Duke gets his teammates. It was a lot of fun to have Reed in the booth with Marshall, figuring out who his teammates were going to be for the U.S. national team coming up the World Magic Cup, December 1st through 3rd. That's in Nice, France, by the way. Not a bad all-expenses-paid getaway. 599 players, top 16 guys, 3 blue-black control, 5 rug energy. Rug energy decks that have dropped the Scorpion God in favor of main deck Confiscation Coup and just that tiny bit better mana. Abzan Tokens, Mardu Vehicles showed up, so did Blue White Approach. You had a Teemer Aggro, a 4-color energy, that's the old build with the Scarab God, not the Scorpion God. Sultai Energy had a couple as well. And maybe the most innovative deck of the weekend, Red White Approach. This was your typical Approach of the Second Sun deck, but instead of blue for control and dig, they substituted in red for creature control and the combo instant win of Sunbird's Invocation. If you cast Approach of the Second Sun with Sunbird's Invocation out and hit a second approach on the cascade, I say that in quotes, you win the game on the spot. Is this a combo deck that is ready to take the metagame by storm, Matt, or was this just an interesting attempt at going outside the box this weekend?
I think it was a very interesting attempt to go outside the box. I was kind of a fan. I mean, it's just one of those really fun decks that you don't see all the time. And sometimes it's just that the metagame is not nearly developed enough to actually allow, or I should say the metagame is too developed to allow something like that slip through. I think we're going to see it pop up. But even though Ixalan doesn't seem to be making a huge splash, the cutting of the huge, card pool that was Shadows and Zendikar, that's really shaken up the metagame. And because of that, it's a lot of different decks, and a lot of people are experimenting where they weren't before.
Brian, what about the transition in Rug Energy? It seemed to be fait accompli that the Scarab God was worth that black splash in the main deck, but now that it's been ousted in favor of Confiscation Coup, the mana is a little bit better, and yes, you have a leg up to not only steal your opponent's Scarab Gods, but also, as Seth Manfield did, to play Carnage Tyrant in the main. Is this just a reaction to what's been the dominant deck in Rug Energy so far?
Yeah, I think it's just a natural shift, because I think Confiscation Coup, if you really look at it, like you were saying earlier with energy, energy is such an efficient resource. You know, you can use it with Whirler Virtuoso to make tokens. You can use it with Harness Lightning to as direct damage for creatures, etc. It's just such an efficient thing. And so why not build that up and take your opponent's best threat with Confiscation Coup. That just seems like a no-brainer. So I think overall, if you kind of put Scarab God and Confiscation Coup side by side, it's pretty easy to see, hey, Scarab God, yes, is going to have an effect on the game, but as an efficient part of the engine that can just kind of keep rolling, that's great. And the fact that Confiscation Coup gives you 4 energy when you cast it is just a boon, because, you know, you're taking all kinds of things from your opponent. So, no, I think that was fantastic. The Temur Energy decks look really, really fine-tuned. I was also very excited about the Abzan tokens list guys that made the top 8, Drew Bates. This is really, really fun for me. I've been high on a while, as you know, for Legion's Landing, and using Legion's Landing, Hidden Stockpile, Anointed Procession, Cast Out, Treasure Map. This is a fun looking list, and I think this is something that's probably going to catch on and maybe be a thorn in the side of the energy decks for the next foreseeable future.
Congratulations to Oliver Tomenko, the youngest ever national champion for the U.S. He, Jerry Thompson, and Reed Duke will now represent the U.S. at that WMC coming up December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, Unified Standard and Team Sealed. Guys, that's a pretty good team for the U.S., but Brazil put together a pretty darn good team over the weekend, and we already know who's on the Japanese team. Do you make the U.S. a cup favorite heading into France, Matt, or are they going to be sort of outgunned by the mega teams these other countries have put together?
I don't know. I mean, this is kind of like putting 5 Evander Holyfields into the ring and seeing who wins. I mean, it is really anybody's game. I think that's exactly how it should be. It seems like the whole format about how it's shaping up and how the teams are going together are going together exactly how they wanted them to go together. I'm a big fan of it. I think that's I think this is exactly what they intended, and I don't think anybody is a favorite. I think it's more so that they're just looking for that tiny edge, and whoever gets that 0.05% edge and doesn't get land screwed is going to be the winner. I don't think it's a matter of skill, because they're all, you know, at the top. Every team seems like they're at the top of their game.
Speaking of skill, Brian, we saw Jerry take Rug to the finals of the U.S. Championship. We saw Reed do very well with Rug and his teammates, the Peach Guard Noth, in the World Championships. This seems like a deck that surely is going to pop up, even in Unified Standard, because you can give the energy, quote-unquote, deck to one player, especially Blue-Black's not sharing any cards with it, and you can probably find a way to work Ram Red in there without overlapping too much with the Rug Energy deck. It seems to me that, okay, maybe Approach is in there as well, but those 4 decks would certainly seem to be the pillars of the metagame in a Unified Standard coming up now in 6 weeks.
And are we going to see any kind of tweaking, such as with issuing the Scarab God for something like Confiscation's Coup, in those decks, even, you know, more fine-tuning to try to, you know, get that slight edge for the metagame? Hurley, I think you're right. The skill level is absolutely, basically, you know, even across the board. But who would you rather have on your team on kind of the deck building and the tuning list? Would you rather have PBDDR? Would you rather have a Reed Duke? Would you rather have a Jerry T? Would you rather have a Yuya? These are the questions, and I think, you know, these guys are going to have to go deep into the tank to figure out what is going to be that really, really slight edge that they're going to take when they go to France.
I'm a big fan of Jerry T in this case. I mean, I think he adds a lot to the – he's got a unique view, and even though I think that he's going to be a little bit overshadowed as far as the team goes, I think that he's going to be the one that's looking – he can look at that metagame from, you know, with a 10,000-foot view and say, okay, here's the level 0 decks, here's the level 1 decks. We want to be playing level 2 decks. I think that's where the big advantage comes in from Jerry.
It'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds coming up in just seemingly a handful of weeks. First weekend of December, the World Magic Cup, one of the truly premium events on the Magic calendar each year. Guys, the U.S. Nationals weren't the only thing on the docket this weekend. SCG had their Charlotte Open. They chose Modern. We're going to come back to that in just a little bit. Paul Mueller on Blue-Red Giftstorm 2-0'd Jonathan Smith on Affinity in the finals. I'd like to point out that Ponza finished 7th, but more significantly, if I had to play Modern tomorrow, it would probably be Ponza. More significantly, only 2 Death Shadows decks in the top 16 Matt, has the format adjusted to Death Shadow, or was this just maybe a blip on the radar and a bad weekend?
It's a little bit that the metagame has adjusted to Death Shadow, and also I think that Storm has really become more proactive and a little bit more streamlined. And people are playing around with Op, too. I don't know if that's making a big difference, but people are playing with it. So I think that does make a difference. It's like I always said, Modern is a fine format for your casual, but I think there's just too many wide open decks to play in a truly huge tournament like a GP. The Open wouldn't be so bad, but the GP is just a little bit much for me.
Yeah, right now the SCG is the size of old school GPs, 537 players this weekend, Brian. And we saw a number of different decks doing well along the way. Modern still a Brewer's Paradise in your mind?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Hurley, you're just a salty old man, I swear.
I am.
When you've got like eighth place, you've got blue-green Merfolk that's playing your favorite card, Smuggler's Copter. How can you not love that?
Oh, I'm not saying creatures. It's bad.
Yeah, yeah, it's wide open, but isn't Legacy wide open right now? I mean, this is what we're spending all of our time and energy getting ready for. I mean, you can't tell me we have nailed down the metagame of this Eternal Weekend in Legacy, which to me is a little bit more wide open than Modern. At least in Modern, you have a sense of what you're going to see in the field. People are going to be coming with crazy stuff at this Legacy Eternal Weekend. So I love the wide open idea, and, you know, Godspeed and tip of the cap to the people who kind of have an idea, run with it, and it goes well for them. The blue-red gift storm that took first and third at the Modern Open this weekend, that is a deck that's obviously on the radar, and it's extremely powerful, as we all know. Affinity taking second is a little bit surprising that it made it that far. But I think that's just, you know, when you get beaten up by so many decks, including Ponza, including Tron, including the Jeskai Control, you know, you're just kind of sneaking and snaking your way to the finish. That's all you can hope for. The thing I like about Modern is looking at these results is you might see 5, 6, 7 different top lists, you know, over the course of 6, 7 months. But at the same time, it's going to come down to skillful play by those people. There's not one deck that's dominating. And I think that's why I'm looking forward to that. And I'm very excited for the first Modern Pro Tour coming up in February. I believe it's on my birthday weekend, guys. So, you know, if you want to give me a gift or something.
From the Modern main event to the Modern Classic, 103 players. Jacob Ballington on Jeskai Control, 2-1 Harlan Frere on Teamer Aggro in those finals. Just 103 players in the Modern Classic. While we're on this topic, I want to jump over for a moment to an announcement that SCG made right before their SCG event in Charlotte this weekend. They have the most consistent tour that's the most widespread and high profile domestically that you don't have to be a pro to play on. They came out and announced their season one for 2018 in the last few days. They're going to have 15 events leading up to their season one invitational. One of those events will be Legacy, 2 will be Standard, 9 will be Modern, and 3 will be Team Constructed. Now, I see a couple of interesting things here. Number one, you remember when SCG used to push Legacy and it was so much fun? Obviously, they now think their sales are better served by Modern, with 9 of those 15 weekends being Modern. They also said that they get the most interest on Standard when new sets release. Well, that seems to be pretty low-hanging fruit. So the only 2 Standard events during their first half of the year next year are going to be on the weekend immediately following the release of a new set. They work in the one Legacy event as an homage to all the old people like us to keep us happy, and then 3 Team Constructed events. It seems like they've learned something from the popularity of teams that we've seen on the Pro Tour this past year, Matt. Is this just recognizing what's good for business is good for them, and that Team Constructed is popular, and that Modern serves their inventory more handily than maybe Legacy did at one point? Because at some point, to me, this just seems like they're using the tour as a front to simply move cards. And as a business, it's up to them to do what they will. But this much of an unbalanced format has me raising my people's eyebrow.
I think it's a big portion of it is the selling cards. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. I mean, they've always been about that. They were always about the you know, when they were about Legacy, they were the premier Legacy vendor. So I don't think that's a bad thing. They're probably right about Standard, but Standard is also, I wouldn't say monopolized, but it's very heavy within the GP circuit. So I think they kind of say, okay, you know what, we'll take Modern, we'll pick up the people that want to play Modern consistently. We will go ahead and, you know, we'll do that, and then we'll just have a couple Standard things, a couple of Legacy items on there too. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, you know, pretty much anymore, going to a SCG Open is just as expensive as going to a GP. It used to be they were significantly cheaper. It kind of is what it is, and there's nothing you can really do about it. I do want to point out one thing, though. Columbus, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, and Louisville, which unfortunately for me are all Modern, but those are all within about a three-hour drive of me, so we may have to have another Tryhards adventure at some point. The Cincinnati team constructed. Cincinnati is less than an hour and a half away from here, so we may have to have a Tryhards get-together in March, if it's at all possible, March 24th and 25th.
I just happen to know two good places to go get ribs in Cincinnati, so I would be willing to share that culinary expertise with you, my presumed teammates, if we go to a team-constructed event as the Tryhards. Brian, what do you make out of this new announcement from SCG? Yes, Modern is where they want to sort of lay the path right at this moment, but should you be worried if you're interested in playing high-level Magic in a certain format? I mean, all it would take would be a slight move for Frontier, it would seem, before we suddenly have a docket full of Frontier events, rather than sort of this cross-format challenge that the SCG Tour has been, with a heavy focus on Standard in the past. They're certainly free to do whatever they wish as a private enterprise, but I was a little bit shocked to see the way that they made out this schedule.
Here's the other thing. I know that up in Worcester, Mass., which they've been going to for, gosh, ever since I think, Sean, you and I have been going to SCG events. Mm-hmm. That has always been kind of the Legacy event on the calendar, correct? They've always done that. Why not mix it up a little bit? I think the Worcester people probably are saying, hey, you know, thanks for throwing us the bone that we're the one Legacy open on the schedule, but why not bring a Modern, or why not bring a Standard here and maybe see if Legacy will run somewhere else? I think it's the fact that we've got a little bit of Northeast bias, and not that that's a bad thing. I think you've got, you know, just such the density of people in the Northeast, so why not have it in a place, you know, where people can get to? But why not Philly? You know, why not a place in Baltimore? Something like that. That just seems a little strange that you're always going to pen that one in, but not make any other accommodations for any other place. So yeah, I agree. It is a little strange how slanted it is. And like I said, I keep harping on how good Modern is as a healthy format, but this just has me scratching my head a little bit.
Well, we can go all the way back as old men who used to remember not only did SCG come to St. Louis, but they used to come twice a year, and one of them was always Legacy because of the Legacy scene here in the Midwest. And so not only do they not come to a place that used to be a twice a year absolute button stop on the tour, but you lost one of your true Legacy outlets when you'd stop doing that as well. So I think that's part of why you see the East Coast, be it DC, be it Worcester, those sorts of markets be their preferred markets for Legacy along the way. That's what's coming up. You can get all the details. We'll have them linked in the show notes. SCG's announcement for next season one. Wrapping up the SCG Charlotte, I want to end with the Standard Classic. Just 78 players. Justin Gregory on Esper Gifts. 2-0. He defeated Marsh Usery, who was on Ram Red. The reason I wanted to circle back on that is one of the cool things that I've seen, guys, since the World Championships was PVDDR's Don't Trust the World's Metagame sort of video blog that he did for Channel Fireball. Paulo does these after major events to talk about his success, his failure, his team's success or his team's failure, and how to learn from it. They are painfully honest and heartfelt and well-researched as well. And I think that it's always worth the 8 or so minutes that these seem to be after they're edited and ready to go. But Brian, I thought there was some real honesty here on why you shouldn't trust the world's metagame because it was such a small and inbred tournament. Did you see the video, and would you trust the U.S. Nationals metagame after seeing a bigger field?
We have so many good Magic players across the globe, and a lot of different types of decks become popular in different areas. I think it would be a mistake to just assume that the U.S. metagame is the world metagame. I think that would just be kind of the heightened stereotype of Americans thinking what we do is what everybody else does.
Matt, is the Brazilian Hall of Famer's analysis on point, or are you going to withhold throwing him your beads at this year's Carnival?
Yeah, he's stating, hey, guys, this is a small inbred tournament. It's not how things are out in the real world. I mean, trust him. He's one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world. Brian's right. You need to look at regions. You need to look at card availability sometimes is a big one. Let's say you have a big GP out in Oklahoma City or somewhere like that. It's the first weekend of standard. Card availability might be that, you know, they're not going to take every single card out there. So maybe there's one particular card. Everyone's like, oh, I need this for a sideboard, but there's only 20 copies of it in the room because of card availability. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into this that you need to look at it. You need to take a long, hard look and say, okay, is this truly how the metagame is really shaping up? Or is this really basically just a, you know, an inbred system that's, you know, everyone's trying to prey on each other. And then all of a sudden you go to your local, you know, your local PPTQ or PTQ or regional RPTQ and you say, this is not at all what I expected. So it's regional, and you can't trust a small tournament like Worlds.
It'll be interesting to see how the metagame shapes up again, heading into the World Magic Cup. That's really going to be the next time you see standard. And even that one won't be true since it's going to be a unified standard. We'll see if technology suddenly becomes scarce here in the next couple of weeks. The one thing that's never scarce, room in the elevator. You would think it would be a personal private pass card elevator. No, it's really a dirty freight elevator. And if there's one guy who likes to go in through the back door, it's our elevator conductor, Mr. Hurley. What do you got?
So my card this week is Stony Silence. I would say probably the best sideboard card outside of Blood Moon in Modern. This card has seen kind of a dip because of a recent reprint. It was up to, I think, $10. It's down to about $5. Pick them up because this will be another card that in about 18 months or so will probably be another $10 card. I'd rather you get them at $5 than $10. So Stony Silence at between $4 and $5 is a great pickup, and I don't see it getting reprinted here anytime soon.
Stony Silence, this week's In the Elevator here on Tryhards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew. Brian, what do you got for us?
I'm going to be looking at a card from Amonkhet that I think is very, very fascinating. I've been high on this card for a number of reasons, and it has made its appearance definitely in a lot of standard decks. This is Soulscar Mage, the red drop human wizard, 1/2. Prowess. If a source you control would deal non-combat damage to a creature an opponent controls, put that many -1/-1 counters on that creature instead. Guys, I just feel like with that kind of wither interaction, there's a lot of brew space here. So Sean, let me kick it over to you first. Soulscar Mage, can this have ramifications across the formats, or is this going to be relegated to a standard all-star for the next few months?
I don't know if it's relegated to standard. I think it will be relegated to role player. And what I mean by that is by bringing essentially, as you mentioned, Wither to the table, you have ways to interact. If you look at Modern, something that's as dangerous as Reality Smasher, where if you target it with a spell, you're going to throw away another card in order to get that interaction. Yes, you still have to do that, but you can maybe, if not deal with it permanently, then reduce its threat level by putting those negative counters on it. Could it be a role player in that situation? We have some indestructible creatures running around in Modern. I don't think this is good enough in Legacy because those creatures, if you're going big, tend to outsize Lightning Bolt or whatever you're going to have there. So I think in Standard, it's going to be a way that the Ram Red Mirror preys on each other. And in Modern, it's going to be relegated to role player for the most resilient of red decks that know they might have to interact with something they're not capable of handling in one shot. So rather than throwing away multiple cards against a Reality Smasher or something of that ilk, you can sort of shrink it, so to speak, with one burst and then just let it play on the table because it becomes suddenly less efficient than everything else that you're doing.
Oddly, I think this is one of those cards that gets better as you print more cards. And what I mean by that is I see this in kind of if you had a red style control deck or they had a support as red, that's not like a straight burn your face type of thing, or it's not just a hard control, but like more of like a mid-range control deck that has a lot of mana sinks in it. That's where I'm seeing this. If it has a lot of mana sinks that maybe, you know, you pump two into something and it does one damage to a creature, something like that, I think this is an enabler. And so I think this is one of those cards that's going to like just float at bulk rare forever until people actually start to get these cards printed into new sets and they say, I can make this combo, and all of a sudden it's going to kind of go into a, like I said, like a mid-rangey control style deck.
I think you both bring up interesting points. Sean, I tend to agree with you that the kind of the value you get from its effect of shrinking things can be really, really good. If you're trying to get low to the ground, and this is definitely a card that goes into low to the ground decks, shrinking larger creatures is always an issue. Having played Burn in Modern for quite some time, this is an issue with Reality Smasher, with some of the larger Eldrazi creatures, Knight of the Reliquary, other things like that. So these are the kinds of cards I think that maybe give you a little bit of game against those, where you're now facing a creature that's not as hugely terrifying, and maybe wasting another card and another burn spell is going to take care of said creature. And Hurley, I absolutely agree with you. The printing of more cards only makes this better, because this is one of those really interesting interactions that I feel like if you get the right combination of spells in the kind of right metagame format, this is the card that could really shine, especially at the one drop level. I've toyed around with this in kind of a burn deck, taking the place of Monastery Swift Spear. It's not up to that yet. The haste is just too important for that, even with the same stats of 1-2 and prowess. But the haste, I think, overshadows this. In a longer game, however, it's definitely a sideboard consideration. So I really like Soulscar Mage in the future, as Hurley says, when more cards get printed.
Soulscar Mage, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. Well, we're about to wrap it up. And when we do wrap it up, our next stop will be at Eternal Weekend in Pittsburgh this weekend. So rather than ask what did you do to get better at Magic, I'm going to ask you guys, what are you going to do to be better at Magic this weekend at Eternal Weekend? For me, the answer is simple. I rarely have the time to put into playtesting ahead of events. But because of travel considerations, I'm going to have some extra time on my hands with, well, nothing better to do but to drink and playtest and travel. Hopefully, number one won't get in the way of retaining the knowledge from number two, and I hope to go into this event more prepared than I have been for anything in quite some time. So getting in those extra reps and that playtesting, I think, is going to make me better this weekend. Brian, what are you going to do to be better at Magic this weekend when we're in Pittsburgh?
The thing that I'm really going to do is mindset. This is a deck I've never played in a competitive format, or excuse me, tournament before. And so going in with a mindset that has to be a little bit different than what I've played in a Legacy tournament, and I'm really looking forward to that, because I have different goals for this deck than I've had for other things. It's been a lot of fun building sideboards. It's been a lot of fun figuring out what are going to be the right choices to make for those last 2-3 slots in the main. I think that is my biggest thing, is mindset. Going in knowing that I have a clear path to victory, I just have to execute it and hope that my opponent doesn't do something to completely stymie that.
Matt, what are you going to do to be better at Magic this weekend?
It's something I'm going to do not beforehand, but while I'm at Eternal Weekend, and that's going to be, I'm going to take much better notes. Obviously, I love Food Chain. I've talked about it a lot. I'm very bad at taking notes during my matches and then looking back and looking at either mistakes I'm making, what my opponent's playing, interesting lines of play, or sometimes it's sideboard options or mainboard options that I think are good. I always use my Sign and Blood life pad, and I want to take more of a little notebook with me and just take some notes while I'm actually playing to see if to see if actually that'll help me out during the tournament. I also do have a one round bye, you know, that I love to flaunt in your guys' faces. And so I want to make sure the other thing is, and this is something that one of the pros always preaches on, and I don't remember which one it is. I want to make sure that I eat a good breakfast. Usually, you know, by the end of the day, I'm starving or I'm eating junk, you know, convention junk food. And I want to take a little bit better, I guess, care of myself during the day, because I would actually like to do relatively well at this tournament.
It'll be interesting to see how it goes down, whether you're playing in Pittsburgh with us at Eternal Weekend this weekend, maybe hitting up the SCG in Cincinnati where Modern will be the open, or playing at your LGS. Have a great weekend. Get better at Magic. We'll check in from Eternal Weekend next week. Oh, you brave soul, you may get the chance to hang out with the tryhards. Keep your eye on your email and our Patreon page, and maybe we'll see you at EW.